All right, we got an awesome show coming up here. Ethan Strauss is going to join us to talk about panicking, which is one of his absolute favorite subjects. But first, it's time to get up, get out, and get back after it. Getting after it also means giving your exhausted muscles what they need to properly recover game after game. That's why real ballers choose to recover with low-fat chocolate milk. Not only is low-fat chocolate milk delicious, it's got the right mix of protein and carbs, scientifically proven to refuel exhausted muscles. So get after it and posterize the competition with low-fat chocolate milk. Check out the science at builtwithchocolatemilk.com. Well, apropos that we're doing time to panic, because this was a panic-worthy loss for the Golden State Warriors. Maybe not. Draymond Green didn't play, but it maybe said more about the Bucks being good. But to discuss this game, but then also which teams around the league, the self-described master of panic, Ethan Strauss, is here joining Danny and me. What's up, buddy?
Thanks for having me, guys. And I have to say, I'm going to be the opposite of a panicker with how I'm talking, because I've got a baby downstairs. So I will be a little bit low energy, a little bit NPR, and hopefully that will soothe any fans of any teams that should probably just blow their whole situation up.
So you want to just be NPR Novitz? That's the goal.
There are worse people to emulate.
Certainly. Well, so Danny, what were your thoughts here as the Bucks absolutely crushed Golden State 134-111? Steph Curry injures his adductor in the third quarter trying to intercept a pass for a Giannis alley-oop. But even the game had been well decided by that point. What did you take away from this one?
Nothing major, except that it was a reminder of a couple of the weaknesses, not only of this team more broadly, but of Steve Kerr more individually. And Steve Kerr is an extremely talented coach. You know, he is a big part of why the Warriors are as successful as they have been. I covered the Mark Jackson years. I understand the difference between the two. But Kerr, if he sees a 7-footer on the floor, he's going to try to play a big. And Brooke Lopez, while he is a talented back-to-the-basket scorer, doesn't do that anymore. He hasn't done that for years now. He transitioned from being an inside the restricted area guy to being an outside the arc area guy pretty quickly, and they still want to play Damian Jones all the time. Damian Jones didn't really do much positive in this game, so that's one big piece. And then when Draymond Green was unavailable, the Warriors don't really have that many natural covers for Giannis anyway, but going with Jordan Bell and Kevon Looney and basically everybody but Kevin Durant for most of it, you know, they didn't really have much of a chance. They got torn through. That's the way it happens. And Durant probably wouldn't have done much better anyway. Then the other part, which I think is the more underrated weakness of the Warriors, is that against athletic, aggressive opponents, especially when a guy's missing like Draymond and Iguodala was limited and Livingston didn't play, they can get baited into playing iso ball. This is part of the reason why the Western Conference Finals was so ugly for most of it, was that the Warriors can get pulled into those circumstances. And so I think we saw some of both of those stories in this game.
I guess my thought on it, I'm allowed to speak on other things, not just the panicking. Yes,
No, you're surprisingly multidimensional.
even if I was watching a lot of Blazers Clippers per my gambling picks during the game. But I think in this instance, yes, it might be cited as a Kerr weakness that he will guard a big with a big. And yes, maybe he will too often use two bigs without Draymond, which I think was just not the right move. But I was talking to some Warriors people after the game, and basically they said, look, if this was a playoff series, somebody like Andre would be guarding Brooke Lopez. You know, I guess it'd have to be a final series. So maybe there's this element with the Warriors where it's hard to judge what they're doing in an individual game, because they have this luxury more so than other teams. They will play in a dramatically different manner versus if it was a playoff series, because deep down it just doesn't mean that much. And so I don't necessarily know if they were doing what they thought was optimal strategically, or, hey, this is just good experience for Jones, or good experience for some of the bigs to have them guard out there. So I guess that would be my thought additionally on that.
I agree with you on defense, and especially with Draymond not playing. I think on offense, it's a little bit different, and I like what the Bucks did. But I think we're really burying the lead here, frankly, and just that the Bucks played so well. I mean, and Steph Curry, this is now his third straight game in which he has kind of struggled a little bit after that torrid start to the season. Then he goes down with the groin, but he was dominated in this game by Eric Bledsoe.
That's true. And it's funny, I was thinking about sitting next to you and how you were yelling mean regression whenever McKinney was launching a three, but perhaps you should have done the same for Steph, because he had that amazing start and there is a lot of buzz, and I probably added to it of it's so great for him and the new rules and blah 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 blah. But you know what goes up has to come down a little bit. The talk of him having a 50-50-90 season might have just been a little premature. Now, I don't know what to read so much into Bledsoe. Bledsoe, to me, is somebody where I don't want to say that he's been a disappointing fit in the past, you know, or just somebody where you wish that he was just a little bit more so.
And this is also the first season in his entire career that he's had a real coach.
That's what I was getting to. So, you know, you wonder if he'll be unleashed. You wonder if he'll perhaps recapture the defensive verve he had when he was with the Clippers.
I thought he did that tonight. I mean, when he was like, he'll fall asleep off the ball sometimes, but his assignment was you stay on Steph Curry and track him around screens. And I thought he really made Steph uncomfortable. Steph was rushing his three pointers.
Yeah. He did a fantastic job all the way around. And so this Bucks team, I mean, if we're going to make a connection with them and the Warriors, maybe there are some shades of the first Kerr season with the Warriors where you take some talent and you see that massive leap when you go from incompetent coaching. Maybe that's too far to call Mark Jackson incompetent, but you go from one level of coaching to another level of coaching, and that seems to be what's happening. I have to give you credit, Nate. I think when you guys were trying to list or rank the most talented teams in the East, you said, and it was a hot take at the time, before the season started, between the Sixers and the Bucks, that you weren't so sure that the Sixers were the more talented team. And I would say that has been borne out. You know, the Bucks obviously had a lot of talent that was somewhat dormant and needed to be goosed, and they are ever goosed right now.
It was just a complete destruction by the Bucks. I mean, some of the numbers were ridiculous. I mean, the Bucks at one point, as they put the pedal to the metal in the third quarter, had a 130 offensive rating at a time at which they were shooting 25% from three. I mean, what they were doing getting to the foul line, Giannis was ridiculous. He had 10 free throws in the first half, went right through. I mean, it's pretty amazing to think that like Jordan Bell and Kevon Looney are like power forwards, and Giannis was just completely overpowering him. And Giannis is like, you know, almost a small forward by trade. Anything else you could take away from the Bucks performance, Danny?
Well, I mean, you guys talked a fair amount about how great Bledsoe was, and he was tearing up offensively a lot more guys too. And he blew by McKinney twice. Whoever they were putting on him, I thought he did, you know, there were a couple times when Clay ended up on him, and I thought Bledsoe did better than I would have expected. And beyond that, you know, like Middleton, I thought this was a decent but not great game for him. It wasn't as bad as that, I'm trying to remember which, that was a game we did for the, against the Celtics, where he just couldn't hit a shot for most of that game. And they were just getting way better shots. They had 84 points in the paint. I think they had 72 in the first three quarters. Got the Warriors got themselves into the bonus, I think 2 minutes into the game. Yeah. And most of those fouls were completely fine. One of them was a little bit dicey. And the Warriors are a little bit foul happy. They also, the Bucks generate that, you know, fouling it rewards the aggressor, and the Bucks were the aggressor from whistle to final buzzer in this game. And that's what happens. And they're phenomenal. And it's so much fun to see an actualized version of this talent. And you could go top to bottom. I mean, Middleton and Bledsoe, but this was the best game I've seen him play in such a long time. And getting back to what Ethan was saying about coaching and everything else, I've always found Bledsoe somebody who the idea of him was so tantalizing that you kind of keep wanting to take that shot, because if it works, it's so amazing. And this was a great encapsulation of what that idea was, of what's so intoxicating about him. I mean, he beasted one of the best players of the modern era pretty thoroughly in this game.
Yeah, I think the other main takeaway that I had was that Bucks defense that we talked about against Boston specifically, of how much they were helping. You know, Ilyasova is probably the guy who does that the most. That actually works pretty well against the Warriors, because and Kevin Durant in particular, KD ended up with a bunch of assists in this game, but I thought he also missed a lot of chances to throw passes. But when the Warriors have a lot of non-shooters on the floor, the Bucks doing a lot of helping and doing it with a lot of length and a lot lot of aggression, I thought really flummoxed the Warriors. And so to see, I mean, the Warriors, outside of a couple of Klay explosions, have basically run on ridiculous Steph Curry and Kevin Durant performances this year. And the Bucks were really the first team they've played this year that said, hey, you know what? We're not going to let these guys beat us. You know, we are going to pressure up. We are going to force them off the three-point line. If they drive, we are going to help off their non-shooters very aggressively at the nail, at the charge circle, make passes. Alphonso McKinney was 1 of 7 for three. He wasn't able to take advantage a little bit. Jarebko missed a couple of wide open ones early. Other guys just weren't willing to shoot him to begin with. They were playing with two non-shooters on the floor a lot of the time, with Jones and at center and Bell or Looney. And so that strategy worked very well in a way that it didn't necessarily against the Celtics. And really, when you consider, too, how well guys like Bledsoe did fighting over screens, like Kevin Durant got his shot blocked three times in the first half. Like, that shows you, A, that he was probably taking a little more difficult looks, and B, that they were being really effective with that help. Ethan, I thought they really missed Draymond offensively in this game, too, because none of their screeners could get anybody open.
Yeah, he has an underrated impact on offense for sure, and but defensively too. I would have loved to have seen Draymond play this game, especially with this new construction of the Bucks team, because I do feel like they don't want Giannis just going for 40 or 50. He's not a decoy, certainly, right? He's getting great looks at the rim, but they want to be a team that leverages him to just open up their spot up shooters. And so I would have liked to have seen strategically if the Warriors just had Draymond take on that assignment fully, minimal help, and see how that might work out. You know, I wanted to see something like that, and I still want to see something like that. And if we are going to say something a little bit negative about the Bucks, who have opened the season fantastically, I love them for the gambling column that I'm writing.
And are you writing
so
gambling column?
To see them like this, I do. I know. I only talk about every 5 seconds.
It's very good, by the way.
I post this to the
athletic.com/capspace. please sign up and read his gambling column. It's fantastic. But it has been mentioned on occasion.
I appreciate you saying that. But, and I would pose this question to the two of you: is it an issue that he can't hit a three-pointer? Is that a bit of an issue? Is that something that could bite them in the playoffs? Is that something that we are underrating as a problem?
A lot less now that they have adequate spacing and a better offensive system to let him just go to work and attack guys. Last year, I think it was more of a problem for him.
Well, here's the addendum I'll put on what Nate said. If Brook Lopez is unplayable in certain playoff series, it's going to become a much bigger issue for them, because a lot of their other options are actually worse shooters than Brook Lopez's.
Yeah, Ilya Sova, I mean, they've kind of gone to him at center in smaller games down the end of games. I still think that they, you know, it would be interesting, like Steve Kerr would have played Thon Maker already. You know, Mike Budenholzer has not really done that. We'll see if they get into some planned rest periods. Thon has had one good game this year when Giannis didn't play. He played mostly at the four, but I think you need to unearth him and see whether there's a more mobile option available for them, because I do wonder about their defense with Brook in particular being unplayable. Even Ilya Sova could get to that level against some of the best teams. All right, let's I don't think it's time to panic for the Warriors yet, but we do have to talk about some other teams that are going to panic or not panic on. We'll have to give them a rating, I guess, right after this. So my wife and I, after we got married, went on the trip of a lifetime for our honeymoon. It was fantastic. We went to Bali, we went to Japan, we stayed at just some absolutely wonderful hotels that we couldn't afford and we'll probably never stay at again. But I must say that the one thing that slightly disappointed me, although I don't know why it did, frankly, because I know how good Helix Sleep is that the mattresses weren't as good as my Helix Sleep mattress. But if you think about it, why should it be? Helix Sleep, despite, I'm quite sure, costing far less than those mattresses at luxury hotels, it's made for me. We filled out their sleep quiz. Took only 2 minutes to complete it, and they used the answers to match our body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress. Fortunately for my wife and I, our preferences matched enough. We were able to get the same style of mattress all the way around. But if you do not match with your significant other, Helix can even split the mattress down the middle, providing individual support needs and feel preferences for each side. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. Right now, Helix Sleep has got an even better deal, up to $125 off all mattress orders. If you're a side sleeper, hot sleeper, you like a plush bed, firm bed, with Helix, there's no more guessing or confusion. Get up to $125 off at helixsleep.com/capspace. Easy to remember, /capspace. We talk about it all the time in the program. That's helixsleep.com/capspace for $125 off your mattress order. helixsleep.com/capspace. Let them know at that /capspace URL that you came from us. All right, well, let's start with a team that got completely waxed today, 98-80 in Oklahoma City. Just a miserable offensive performance. No Russell Westbrook, no problem for the Thunder. The Rockets managed only an 88 offensive rating in this game. What do you think, Ethan? I mean, if scale of 1 to 10, where is your panic meter for the Rockets? With 10 being... Let's talk about it in the context of what their preseason expectations were, right? This is a team that was expected to be a favorite to at least get to the Western Conference Finals and, you know, maybe even give the Warriors a run as they did last year. In context of that expectation, with 10 being absolutely no way they get there, and one being like, yeah, they probably still will. Where are you at?
I like how you're defining the rubric of that it's about your expectations, because that is what gets people fired.
Would you expect anything different from Nate? The rubric of panic?
I mean, look, it's the rubric of panic. No, I think it's the way to do it, because when I was looking at the various teams that have disappointed a little bit, they do have differing goals, right? I think a successful season for the Washington Wizards is a different thing than the successful season for the Houston Rockets. So yeah, it's got to be about the expectations. I'd say my panic level is at an 8. Now, I wonder about this thing where, in the context of the teams that we're talking about, I know Nate especially prioritizes the tangible over the intangible and thinks a lot of the subjective stuff is bullshit. And
I wouldn't even say that. It's just that I think that stuff, you can't measure it. It kind of all cancels each other. Like, every subjective reason that you come up with, I could come up with some other objective reason, and there's really just no way to know. And so I think when you get into that stuff, unless there's just like really hard stuff on the ground that you know, now, like in terms of like an injury or something, like that's probably the more subjective stuff than it is like, oh, you know, the locker room is bad or whatever, or they're just not concentrating this year or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I asked because I was talking to a basketball ops guy after the game tonight, and he was saying about the Rockets that people think that it's they got rid of Ariza and Mamute. No, it's their chemistry is fucked. Like, that's their problem. And I tend to think that it's the former and not the latter. I tend to think that
it's not only who they lost, the dearth. It's who they added.
Yeah. I think that there's also that they haven't replaced what they've lost with what they need to. And I'm not sure where I am on Ennis, but I just think they don't have enough defense. And when you combine it with, and we don't know where he's going to be at the end of the year, you know, we ask this pretty much every year. Is this the year Chris Paul starts breaking down? Is this the year that he finally starts looking like a 5'11" guy who relies a lot on guile? And maybe if he loses a little bit of an edge right there, is just not going to be the same kind of player. There are some reasons for concern right now, and it's difficult to see this team exceeding expectations. You can see a path to it. If you told me fast forward the season, they're in the Western Conference Finals, maybe I wouldn't fall over, but they don't. God, they just look so far from being the second best team in the West so far.
Well, Danny, what has gone wrong for them? I mean, I think that's, you have to first figure out what the symptoms are before you can come up with a diagnosis for the disease. So where have they been lacking? I mean, I think it's more important to talk about, you know, how they've looked with Harden, because obviously he missed some time with that hamstring. Paul got suspended. So they've had other injury issues with Ennis. Eric Gordon has been out, etc. But like, what's been the problem with this team? Like, we need to accurately really discuss that.
So I think narrowing the field to more of the Harden time is fair, because it's a more representative sample of not only where they are as a team, but also what they're going to be as a team, hopefully moving forward. I mean, if Harden is limited or out, then they're not going to be nearly as good. And so defensively, I think one of the really concerning parts for me is just that teams are better at exploiting what they do. And there are a couple of reasons why that's the case. One is it's not as much of a novelty anymore. You know, teams have dealt with this. The coaching staff spent part of the offseason, because when a team is successful, coaching staff spend time figuring out how to counter it, because that's just the way this works. I mean, it happens in the NFL every year, happens in basketball. I mean, the elevator doors play was the rage, and then all of a sudden teams figured out how to figure it out, and then it became less the rage, and that happens. But the other part for Houston is just they have personnel that's easier to attack now. And so when you look at their defensive numbers, you're not really seeing anything that's truly, you know, unsustainable in terms of an opponent's success. Like the opponents are shooting 35% on threes, not including garbage time against them. That's not some insanely great number that is going to, you know, it's actually below, I think that's below average for this year. And so you have that, and they are shooting 42% from the corner threes. But again, the overall number is what's more important there. And the shots they're forcing are generally in line with what they've done in other years. Their foul rate is much higher. I think that can tone down. But also teams are attacking their guards more aggressively, and I think that's leading to more fouls. So I think they'll be better, but the idea of them as putting a charge into the Warriors, if that's what we're defining as kind of part of their preseason expectations, that is going to rely substantially more this year on the singular offensive brilliance of Chris Paul and James Harden, and we're not sure if that's all going to be there. And what we know about this Warriors team, or even the elite teams in the East, is that you need to be cohesive and capable on both ends of the floor in order to be a real threat. And I am not convinced that the Rockets are going to be that.
All right, here's my bullet points on the list of things that are wrong with them. Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah.
Carmelo Anthony. Okay, that's three. All right. I got some others too, but so I guess we can go into Melo right now. Matt Moore had this stat today. Rockets net rating of -9 with Melo on the court, +1.8 with him on the bench. Defensive rating 11 points per 100 worse with him on the floor. That is the worst differential of any player to play over 100 minutes this season. Oh, and by the way, he was 1 for 11 from the field today, and -22, which was a team worst. He's not really making up for it offensively either. I mean, my hope was that, you know, he could become more of a spot up guy. He's had some pretty good spot up shooting games. He had 6 for 9 against Brooklyn. But, you know, I mean, unless he's just going to be bombing in threes, which it doesn't look like he's going to get there, you know, he is a very, very negative player. So I think that's one that shows out to me for sure. And he gives a place to attack. I mean, I guess the question is, do they have the will, or do they have the personnel, or do they have the ability to get new personnel that can eliminate that problem for them? What do you think, Ethan?
I was talking with somebody who reports on that team, and early in the season when this started to crop up as a problem, and he said, I said, at what point does he cut bait? Like, at what point is Melo banished from the rotation? And he said, no way, not even close. D'Antoni wants to get him six man of the year. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's in the offing.
No, it isn't.
So I don't see much. Yeah. I don't see that much in the way of will to make the move that needs to be made. And maybe they will get there when it just becomes so glaring. But then I wonder, yes, I think at the top of the items that we're looking at for what's ailed them, Carmelo Anthony would be the obvious one to land upon. And I just wonder if that's the only major issue here.
Yeah.
Like, if that's, is that going to be
that? That's a question that I want to get into here is, let's say, I don't know if this is going to be the case. The Phoenix Suns are 2-9 at the moment. We could talk about that game a little bit later. But let's say on February 15th, Trevor Ariza somehow pops into the waiver wire and he clears waivers and he decides he wants to go to the Houston Rockets. How much of this gets fixed? I mean, I think a lot of it does, but I certainly don't think all of it does.
Well, one thing as an aside here, will you guys just like come with me to the G League Showcase in December and we can just like put like a canvas bag over Daryl Morey's head and kidnap him, take him to a luxury hotel room in some high rise and pump him full of sodium pentothal and find out whether he actually thought that signing Melo was a good idea or whether he just did it because his players wanted to? Can we just make a pact to do that right now?
There are things we should not admit in public, Nathaniel.
I mean, I do wonder if somebody might have you could talk yourself into role player mellow D'Antoni magic.
Oh,
you know, you could maybe, you know, contort yourself into the right perspective to think that it's the right way to go.
The team that all three of us are around more than the other ones just gave Nick Young the full mid-level exception. So this has happened before.
Yeah. Well, they had the ability.
The GM / player heat
check. They had the ability to not play him, though. I mean, okay. So Mello aside here, right? I mean, I think you hit on a good thing there, Danny.
Well, that's why I'm interested in the answer to my recent question, because that idea of how much does he fix?
Okay, so, you know, and I think actually they miss him a little bit on offense because they just, you know, they don't have, he's a better offensive player, better shooter than James Ennis. Now, Ariza hasn't exactly looked that great in Phoenix himself this year. You know, he's 34, so, you know, he could be suffering from decline. That's part of why they didn't re-sign him to begin with. But I think the greater problem here that no one has been talking about until very recently is their offense has sucked. With James Harden on the floor this season, 104 offensive rating. I mean, that would rank, as of now, 23rd in the NBA. That's the same as Cleveland's overall offensive rating. That's what they've looked like with Harden. I'm sorry, it's worse than that. There'd be a 24th. So Chris Paul has been awful, under 500 true shooting, PR of 18. I mean, just can't hit a shot. There's this nebulous elbow injury that Tim McMahon cryptically tweeted about today. I mean, he doesn't look that much worse. Harden, to me, does look worse. He's finishing very poorly around the rim. He looks like, you know, he'll kind of wax and wane as far as, you know, what type of shape he looks to be in, but he definitely looks on the heavier side of that. He hasn't had the explosion at the rim. He's been leaving a lot of those short. So if those two guys aren't as good as, and especially Paul, I mean, Harden, I think, will come around. But if Paul's not the same guy, I mean, you know, they're put the panic meter up to a 10. We're done here with these guys as a contender.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if Paul's compromised, I mean, there's just no shot. There's no shot at all. I mean, Paul's the player the Warriors fear most. I think the Warriors, if you asked some of the people in the organization in a playoff series, which player gives us more problems, they would say Chris Paul.
Really?
So yeah, if he's compromised, there's no way.
It doesn't seem to be. I don't agree with that. I guess we'll put it that way. But
I mean, that's their assessment. I think one of the reasons, at least given to me, is that it's easier to find where the other guys want to shoot. It's easier to find what they want to do. I think Chris Paul operating in that pick and roll mid-range is something that their defense isn't necessarily geared for.
I mean, I thought they forced him into tough shots last year.
I think he played, and frankly, I think he played better than Harden did in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's true.
I would agree
so
with that.
So another problem they have, zero depth, right? I mean, they have to play Melo. They don't have anyone else. I mean, they have kind of an older team. They've had these injuries. Gordon has been out. Paul is certainly an injury risk. They have absolutely no one at backup center. Nene, who the hell knows when he's going to come back at this point. There's Isaiah Hartenstein, who actually has the best net rating on the team. Marquise Chris. Then they had to play Michael Carter Williams. He's out of the rotation now. They'll look better just because of that, because he had like a negative 19 net rating. But they're going with Gary Clark, who's basically like, you know, I forget whether he's a two-way guy or undrafted, but, you know, he's plays hard and a nice story, but he's not, you know, a playoff caliber rotation player either. So, I mean, they got to get some reinforcements here, and those may come in the buyout market. Like, they could start playing a lot better. I mean, I would be a lot less worried about them if they just looked better on offense. Like, if they were just, you know, their same dominating selves on offense, it's like, okay, the defense sucks, but the defense sucks because, you know, they have no backup big and they're playing Melo all the time. And, we've had this list of ills has been very long. I mean, there's a lot of holes to put your finger in the dike, and Daryl Morey, he might only have three or four fingers, and that might not be enough to put in this dike.
Let's say they get Jimmy Butler. Yeah. Then how do we feel?
Well,
about
who are they giving up? I mean, they're not going to get him, it seems like, unless they give up, you know, a PJ Tucker and an Eric Gordon. You know, so like Tom Thibodeau and maybe even Glenn Taylor wants rotation players back.
Yeah, that's a challenge. Oh, one other thing I wanted to mention here is that Houston right now, and I think this is something that has to get better, and it will, is that they're not getting to the line. I mean, they've been top five in free throw attempt rate for the last, I think, 6 years, and then they're 26th right now. That will help give them some easy buckets. That might get them from like 24th in offense all the way up to like, I don't know, 15th or something like that. But it's still like, it's still there. And with Jimmy Butler, I'm not sure. I mean, certainly he helps them. He's a very good player. But offensively, he's not as much of an additive talent because they already have two amazing creators.
Well, unless Paul's not and as good anymore. I mean, that's the that right. he could help them more.
Sure, he would help them more, but is Chris Paul really going to give up those possessions? You know, like you get into all of those circumstances as well. Where's it going to come from? And somebody else I wanted to mention just briefly is a disappointment. I hoped that when these injuries happened, that Gerald Green could step into a larger role. He was okay last year, 20 minutes a game. Yeah, 20 minutes a game. Some nights he gets into double figures. Some nights he's not there. And I hope, I mean, he had some nice playoff series. He had some good individual defense moments, all those kind of things. And we're just not, I haven't seen it very much from him this year, and they, you know, I don't think he's a defining characteristic of this team, but he could help.
8.2 PER for Joe Green. Eric Gordon has a 7.7 PER. I don't know. Anything else on them, Ethan? Or I mean, like I'm with you. I'm 8. I might even be a 9. You know, the more we talk about them, the worse I feel.
Yeah.
I'm a 7 for right now, for the record.
Yeah. Well, that's level headed of Danny to be a 7. I'm all the way ramped up to 8. One thing though that might mitigate the panic a little bit might not be so much them, but just the upper tier of the West. And, you know, per this podcast, doesn't seem to be what it's been in the past.
Yeah, like Denver, Portland, like that's not scaring me too much if I'm Houston. Is, you know, I mean, it's really more just about them getting back to that level. I wanted to share, actually, this is some really good statistical work from Andrew Johnson at Nylon Calculus. He basically took a look at what we can expect in terms of regression from teams based not only on how their shooting and their shot location from those places, but then also he found that generally just where you're getting your shots can also regress, right? If you, like, teams are shooting, so if you're shooting just a ridiculous number of your shots at the rim, for example, as a team, like which the Lakers are as an example, we'll talk about them later, that has a tendency to regress over the course of the season. There's just a certain spread that happens over the course of the season that it's hard to get beyond, if only because teams are like, hey, you know what, like these guys are just shooting everything at the rim, we're going to start focusing more on taking that stuff away. So he found that basically aberrations in shooting are about one third, like inconsistent shot location, I shouldn't say inconsistent, but basically unsustainable shot locations, both for good or for ill, and then two thirds shot making. And so Houston, based on his research, should get about a 5.1% e field goal percentage improvement. That would be the highest in the NBA. They have a variance based on just how good they're making the shots that they're getting from certain locations, and then also where you can expect their shot mix to change. So that is one reason for optimism in terms of their offense. Their defense, though, is not really, doesn't have any indicators like that. Their defense, they've been getting their ass kicked, and basically rightfully so, based on how they've been playing. All right, who else? So we're both at an 8. Give me your, they are 4-6 right now. How many games do you think they're gonna win, finish up this season?
Ooh, that's so hard. I wasn't even prepared to think I was just panicking. I was too busy panicking.
I sent you the spreadsheet. I sent you. Well, yeah, now you can really panic.
I'm gonna say 42.
42, you're gonna win 42 games. How are you only at an 8 then? You should be at a 10.
Okay. Let's bump it up then. They can't be so bad that they only win half their games. I'll bump it up to 47.
Okay. 47. So that would basically have them playing at the pace of a 49 win team the rest of the way. And that's, that seems about right to me, to be honest. I mean, and you know, I could see them making moves. I could see them starting to play better, that get them kind of right back into it and get them healthy. You know, it just in terms of how they're playing. What about you, Danny?
I think they're. I'm more optimistic than you see that by having a lower score. I have them playing at a 56 win pace the rest of the way, so not nearly as good as last year, but still pretty good. And then that would mean they would be 53, and I guess that'd be 29 overall in the season. So that would be in the mix for the second best record in the West, depending on how some of these teams shake out. And there is a lot of downward thrust on that. I mean, I think it's a lot more likely that they play it below a 56 win pace. It's going to be hard, but if I'm picking most likely outcome, I still believe in their talent, and they are going to get healthier because they can't really get less healthy, especially if you count Chris Paul's suspension. They can't really miss more time with those guys than they have so far.
All right, Ethan, who else intrigues you on our little list here? We're big surprise. We're going really slowly through this, so we may not get to all of them. We might have to do like a lightning round. But where do you want to go next?
Oh, it's a list of intrigue, and I didn't know I was supposed to slot in the predicted record. But so here's a question. I don't know if this is the most intriguing team on the list, but it wouldn't have occurred to me to put them on the list, which is the Pelicans. I'm not very panicky about them, so I want to hear the case for panic. That's what I'm curious about with the Pelicans.
Yeah, I mean, they're 5-6. There's also the fact that, you know, Anthony Davis could. I think the case for panic is that because Anthony Davis is nearing this crossroads, that they really, like, I mean, unless you see them being, you know, maybe like a hard fought second round loss, I mean, that's probably, you know, lose to the Warriors in seven games in the second round. Like, if they're not at that level, you know, it seems like almost fait accompli to me that AD is going to leave or not sign that extension.
Yeah. So, okay. So the reason for panic is what he was talking about with Haynes and not necessarily about
really high higher expectations than, you know, maybe people are like, oh, you know, the Pelicans, they'll probably be a playoff team. Maybe they get to the second round. It's like, no, you got to actually do better than that if you want to hold on to AD.
At the same time, given the construction of their roster, would you be absolutely shocked if they made it to the Western Conference Finals?
Well,
if they were,
Could be the greatest beneficiary of this whole Houston thing. I mean, I think I like them better than Denver. I like them better than Portland. You know, if Houston's just not going to be that good, and they dominated Houston, I think they actually match up very well against Houston with some of the guys they have to beat switching defenses. Randall is a great key for unlocking that.
Well, and that's the thing too, is Randall. That's one of the reasons why I'm just not so panicky about them. Yes, you know, the Anthony Davis quote is worrisome, but you're going to have that hanging over you anyway, especially after he hires Rich Paul. But this Randall thing is just such found money that in many ways makes me feel better about them and kind of overshadows the record or the lackluster start overall, I guess.
What do you think about the Pels, Danny? Are you, they had this great start. Now they've really struggled. I think they are like, you know, 1-6 in their last seven now.
I understand why you put them on the list, but I probably wouldn't have, just because I attribute a lot of their struggles to Anthony Davis not being right. And while that, you know, as somebody who is bullish on them overall, a lot of that does depend on Anthony Davis being right, because he's so important to their team. What you guys are getting at in terms of how they define success is such a fascinating question, because, you know, Davis, they've made the playoffs, then got swept out when Davis was a lot younger, and then they made the playoffs last year, got that big sweep, and then lost pretty handily to the Warriors. And so how they define it, I mean, if they're going into this, they have to make the playoffs. I mean, if they don't make the playoffs, then I think he's gone, just because you can't, unless there's some sort of catastrophic thing that will be resolved by the next year. But absent that alternative, basically what the idea behind panicking for them would be, you're putting so many eggs in the playoff basket, and that very well might not work out. And we also don't know what Anthony Davis wants. I talked about this a little bit in a piece about how it's always hard when you're dealing with an individual, because you don't know what they value, what inputs matter to them. But I still think they're a good team. I mean, so if we want to go to the record thing, I'll just throw mine out there early. I think they're going to be like playing at a 48 win pace. That is, again, optimistic, but I think they're a 50 win plus team at full strength, and they won't be full strength all the time. So that would mean they'd have 47 wins. That'd probably be not in the tippy top of the West, but still pretty good depending on how long some other teams are hurt. And I like their talent. I believe in their talent. They don't need as much from newcomers, you know, like the Rockets do. I think the Rockets need an infusion. The Pelicans could benefit from it, but don't need it. So that's a positive for them. But yeah, I mean, they need guys to play well. I mean, Mirotic was on fire at the beginning part. That was probably unsustainable, but they need him to play well. Jrue Holiday is another central figure for them. So my panic meter for them isn't low, but I understand how quickly that can turn. So I think you're ahead ahead of the curve here, but that the car might be going around that curve anyway.
Two quick reasons for options. My panic meter for them, just, you know, in terms of getting to where people kind of thought they would be, it's pretty low. I'd put it at like a 3 rating. And because 7.5 net rating with AD on the floor, their defense is what has been so bad. They are 10 points per 100 worse when he is off the floor, and he's missed it time, obviously, with that elbow. That's something that's probably eventually going to resolve. And then also, per Johnson's research, they had one of the largest improvements or expected improvements in their field goal percentage defense. That should improve, according to Johnson's research, by 4% opponent's e-field goal percentage. So there's reason to think their defense could be better, both with Davis playing more. Peyton will be back. I mean, they're very thin. I also expect this team to trade another first-round draft pick to get more help on the wing, which will really help them. That's what their big weakness. I'm not that worried about them. What do you think, Ethan?
I'm not that worried. I'm probably at the 3 as well. I think I would predict over 50 wins. I think a lot of the reason for panic is Anthony Davis base. So yes, it's very scary if he goes down with an injury that sinks your season and you worry about him going out the door. So yes, there are certainly reasons for concern. But as far as how they're playing, when I've watched them, when Anthony Davis is playing, I still like a lot of what I see with this team. I like the general mix of it. I've worried about Mirotić in a playoff series. Now you can kind of take him out of a playoff series. So having another powerful forward dynamic like Randall makes me feel better about them overall. I feel pretty decent about this team. I like the Pelicans.
Yeah, I mean, right now I would say, I mean, unless Houston gets better, I think they have as good a chance of anybody of getting to the West Finals if they can stay healthy. This is actually a good one for you, a little bit off topic here, but it occurred to me as we were talking. You know, people might be like, oh, AD, like, he's going to stay because, you know, they can offer him the most money, right? Like, they can give him that designated player veteran extension, 35% of the salary cap instead of 30%. So, you know, it's about a $40 million difference in what he could get versus from another team, and even if he gets traded and they have bird rights and can sign a 5-year deal, he still would make a lot more. But isn't it weird for a fan base to be like, well, you know, and I guess if he prioritizes winning, he'd probably want to be somewhere else, but let's just hope he's greedy. Let's just hope he doesn't care that much about winning. He just wants money.
It shows how the NBA salary cap combined with state law really skews, and it just skews perspective. It's funny. I didn't really thought about that way.
He's not leaving. Guy is just totally money grubbing. We know he doesn't care about anything except his wallet. He'll be staying here for sure.
Thank God he's such a money prioritizing loser that he's going to help us win.
Oh man, that's great. Okay, so we don't have to do the predicted record necessarily on all of these. Some of them, I think it's interesting. But which of these other potential panic teams intrigues you, Master of Panic?
Dude, they're all so intriguing. I mean, I the Lakers might be kings of intrigue right now.
Yeah, So
let's get into it.
Yeah, the Lakers right now sit at 5-6, like a lot of these teams. Give you some more fundamentals on them. They are the number 8 offense and the number 22 defense at the moment, basically a neutral point differential. What stood out to you about these guys? Like, what's their problem right now?
I mean, obviously defense is their problem, but I will say this is subjective because his numbers aren't that off. You know, his numbers are still pretty good, but when I've watched them, LeBron doesn't completely feel like LeBron to me. Is anybody else getting that? There's just not that level of force and command of the game. And then there are these weird things that happen when I was watching their game against the Mavericks, for instance, where he just completely faded out and wasn't part of the offense down the stretch. And then afterwards, Luke Walton said something about, you know, LeBron knows how to win games. We know he can win us games. The other guys need to learn how to win us games. I don't buy that for a second. Luke Walton, fearing for his job, is just going to have Brandon Ingram run the the offense at the end of a close game. So I don't totally know what's going on there, and I don't know if it's age, and I don't know if he's completely checked in. But the thing that stands out to me the most is I just see a LeBron James that, and yes, he's not as checked in the regular season, but just isn't as present and as much of a force as I'm used to.
I was thinking about that at the end of their win over Minnesota when he was just jacking up a couple of threes and not really battling to get into the lane or anything like that. And I don't think he played that many minutes in that game from what I remember. And James is, he can coast, and I mean he is defensively, obviously. I mean there's not really any argument on the other side of that anymore. But yeah, I think he's been a little bit less dominant. Some of that might just be trying to get comfortable with his teammates and feeling everything out. But I would agree with you. I haven't seen that dominance from him offensively overall. I mean, other than the dunk fest on opening night when they played the Blazers, those real series where he's just orchestrating everything and the other team just has no chance. You get to like the level below that, which LeBron kind of, that's his idling a lot of the time, but not that real peak as often.
Yeah, I think that's true, but you know how you can separate that from, and there have been whispers, Windhorst was talking about this, that you know maybe he had kind of a hectic summer, did not come in the usual level of shape that he is in to start a season. How much of that is, well, you know, they don't really have that much spacing. How much of that is they're trying to get the ball to guys like Rondo and Ball and let them run things, and Ingram has to have his chance to do stuff, and then you know, you got to throw it to Kyle Kuzma every once in a while. How much has it been just some guys not hitting shots on this team? But I think the ecosystem for just his personal offensive success is a more difficult one than really any time probably since his first season in Miami.
Yeah, he's not as he's not flanked by as much shooting, certainly. And that probably makes him a less effective player. But again, it's a subjective take, but it just seems like he's not completely locked in. And I don't know what's up with that. There are some things to like with this team, certainly. They've got some young talent. They've got some intriguing pieces. There are flashes from Ingram. I don't know. Here's a question. What is Ingram's ceiling? Like, what do you think that he could potentially be? I would like your perspective on that, because I think that might determine a lot of what this whole Lakers situation can be.
Danny, I'll let you take this one since, you know, I don't want to get decapitated in Temecula by some Lakers fan.
So as strange as this sounds, my theory on Brandon Ingram is actually that he's better guarding smaller guys than bigger guys, just because that way Kevin Durant's actually kind of like this, where he can use his length and doesn't get bullied as much. So defensively, I don't think you want to stick him on the best of the best. He's more of a complementary defensive player, which is still valuable. I mean, teams need those kind of players all over. And then offensively, he strikes a balance that is always concerning for me, and it's also something that I disagree on with a lot of players, including my dear friend Jason Tatum, where in Ingram's case, I think that he's more dangerous with the ball in his hands than without it.
Yeah.
And he's not good enough with the ball in his hands to do that against the best. So that means he's just, actually another example of this, though I don't think he's quite this way, is Aaron Gordon, a guy that I think is widely overrated, where they do something well, but they don't do it well enough for it to be a real competitive advantage. And so that makes Ingram more of a complimentary guy. Fortunately, he's played next to LeBron James. So the definitive question for me is not necessarily what percentage he shoots from three. I mean, you can get into the Justice Winslow complex and all that kind of stuff, but it's how aggressively is he going to take them? And when teams react to him, the two dribbles and a good decision type stuff, I think he'll be good at that role, but I'm not sure that he can be more than that, but that I would expect that as the most likely outcome.
Well, the other guy to wonder about, and I think there's just a huge variance in, or just a huge range in what people think he's capable of, and it's further complicated by the Rondo situation, is Ball. And I have no idea. And I have no idea if he would have been progressing better if not for the introduction of Rondo to the situation. That can have an impact on young guys, certainly.
Yeah. He also, like, you know, didn't have an offseason. That doesn't help much.
No, that yeah, doesn't help and, much. It also doesn't help much that it seems like LeBron isn't his biggest backer in the world. I think that's another one.
Well, something I wanted to bring up with Lonzo, and this is not the best argument to make for a point guard, but I've been very impressed with his defense. I think he will be a good to very good, maybe even stronger than that defender for his position. position. That's not the most important thing for a point guard, but that is a nice little fallback in terms of his value, especially playing with LeBron. Now he's still going to have to make shots. That's the only way to make it work, but that is encouraging.
Give you a stat on the Lakers here. They are taking just a crap load of shots at the rim, and that's expected to decline just because, again, teams don't take that many shots at the rim over an entire season. So they are
shout out JaVale, by the way.
No, he's been huge for that. You know,
if he wasn't playing well, I mean, what would the panic meter be?
Yeah, well, so I think I wanted to get to that too. But they are expected to experience, and you know, this isn't gospel here, and it doesn't account for the talent of the players. You know, JaVale certainly being one of them, LeBron being one of the greatest guys at the rim ever. Ingram is good at getting to the rim, etc. But they are expected to experience a 2.9% decline in their E field goal percentage, and their defense is pretty much, you know, kind of right where it's expected to be. So there's not much room for optimism, at least in the numbers of like, oh, this is going to regress, they'll be fine type of stuff, at least with that. But now that they actually have a backup center, they've defended okay with JaVale on the floor. If they can get similar production from Tyson Chandler, you know, it's not Jonathan Williams and it's not Kuzma at center, you know, then maybe the defense kind of gets fixed.
I don't know. I'm suspicious of that.
Yeah,
I know Chandler looked. I know Chandler looked like he had a little more spunk than he had in Phoenix, maybe in that small sample size of a game.
Yeah.
But I think that his defensive deficiencies are going to show themselves over the course.
And he's not a good offensive player anymore, Chandler. I mean, he's a good screen setter. He's a good offensive rebounder, but he's not the finisher that he used to be. Not the finisher that JaVale is. And then also, I mean, if they're really going to just go away from small ball, you know, that really to me limits their upside. If they do get into the playoffs, that, you know, JaVale McGee and Tyson Chandler, I mean, those are guys who are going to be able to get attacked defensively, I think. You know, Chandler once was a wonderful defensive player. I think he's a little too slow now at age 36 to really, you know, guard the best pick and roll players. So they are raising their floor and lowering their ceiling at the same time. But, you know, this is a team that could get some buyout guys. You know, I think that there are a couple of moves away. At least they haven't played Lance Stephenson as much anymore. Like, that's kind of the first move they needed to make to kind of fix their lack of shooting. And I think, like, there is, especially if LeBron starts playing together, there are combinations here that I think could be dominant on offense, but that's really what's going to have to happen. I don't see, with this version of LeBron, JaVale at center, you know, some of the young guys they have, like Kuzma's still pretty bad defensively, like, I don't see them getting much above average defensively. So if they're going to be a real good team, they're going to have to get into the top five in offense. And I think that could happen, but I'm not sure that it will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, imagine. Yeah. Go ahead, Ethan.
No. I want to hear Danny's thoughts. It's just going to rain negativity, but I want to hear Danny's thoughts.
I'm so excited for when they're going to play Lonzo, Josh Hart, LeBron, either Kuzma, Ingram, and Julius Randle together, because that lineup's going to tear up the NBA.
Oh, man. Well, you know, we should give a shout out to Josh Hart for being decent.
Yeah. Yeah, although I do think he's a little overrated defensively at this point. He's not bad, but he's not like a stopper quite yet. So panic meter for the Lakers. Like
I'm going to go, What? Here's the crazy thing, too, is I don't even know what the expectations for them were.
48 like wins 50. And second round. That's kind of what I felt like.
I felt like it would have been. I felt like the expectations were LeBron makes two movies. You know, this whole move didn't seem to be about winning. Like, I don't really know what people expected. It was a big deal, but nobody was saying we're going to win the championship.
They are a really entertaining team to watch, though. I will give them that. Like, I've really enjoyed watching this team.
I've enjoyed them in the picks column for other reasons, but I don't know. Like, I don't know what they want out of this. You know, is Luke Walton getting fired the measure of panic? Because I think that seed is quite
hot. You think he's going to get fired?
Reports of over the course of the season.
Let's say they're 500 a month from now. Is he gone?
Yeah, I think he's going to get fired. Yeah. I think he's getting fired. I think it's not a good sign that Magic Johnson, through these leaked reports, is effectively...
Who do you think leaked that?
Maybe he's not flaunting.
Who do you think leaked that? It was Luke or I wouldn't want to Lakers or
Magic?
Oh, there's
no way... I don't want to speculate on what caused the reporting or who said.
Well, okay, let me change.
I would say this.
Who had the motivation?
If Luke,
who had the motivation to leak?
I would say definitely not Luke's side. Yeah. I don't think that looks good. Although I could see somebody saying people need to know how unfair the situation is, but it's emasculating, you know, that the way it was reported.
Well, Magic was like supposedly pissed off that it got out. I mean, I think it might have just been like Luke kind of thinking like, hey, you know what? I'm actually doing a good job. If I leak this, the reaction is going to be what it was, which was this is fucking ridiculous. You know, like, so just in terms of motivation, I actually think that Luke mm-hmm. probably would have had more reason to leak it. But I have no idea who it actually was. But just in terms of motivation, to me, it seems like it would make more sense for Luke Just think, like, the reason you leak something is because you want people to react in a way that's favorable to you. And I thought that people reacted. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know the truth, right? The truth is Magic was pissed off at him, right? So it's not like, I think the fact that was leaked, once you already know Magic has dressed him down, if you're Luke Walton, it strengthens your position to have everyone in the media saying it's ridiculous for Magic to do that.
It might strengthen your position, but you never want to look so emasculated, especially as a head coach. You just don't think that's a good look.
Stan Van Gundy and Jeff Van Gundy like going crazy on the next broadcast of like how wrong it is that this is happening. Are you kidding me? Like I don't know, Danny. Who is
now? I can joke about that freely.
I think Magic had more reason to leak it because of the just panic that is around the Lakers whenever they're not meeting those expectations of the, see, I'm doing something, like, look at this, I'm trying to make something better, like that generally to me is more what it is. Okay. I think more people thought the Lakers were underperforming than Luke Walton was underperforming, and so that leads me, but I understand your logic, and we can talk about panic meters if you want, but I want to say there's one team that I want Ethan's non-Lightning thoughts on others. So can I pitch one to him?
Hold on here.
After Panic?
We'll find out what these ratings are, but first let's just give Ethan a chance to like breathe into a paper bag and like calm down a little bit. We'll do a read here. I think we're all getting a little worked up panicking with these teams, so let's take a quick break. Fortunately, one thing that we don't have to panic about is finding a dress shirt that fits. I used to hate going to the store to try to find one because I'd have to try on 50 of them, it seemed like, before I could get one that even came close to fitting me. And even then, it really wasn't that great. The torso was too wide if I wanted the arms to be long enough. But with ProperCloth.com, now I can easily create a custom shirt size in seconds by answering 10 simple questions. Choose from over 20 collar styles, 10 cuff styles, 500 fabric styles, from classic to business to business casual. You can even customize your shirt and get the style that you want. They work with the best fabric producers. Each one of their shirts goes through extensive quality control testing. And best of all, they guarantee a perfect fit, meaning if your shirt doesn't fit perfectly, they will remake it for free. Proper Cloth starts at just $80. That is far less than just a normal dress shirt at most department stores, and this one will actually fit you perfectly. Stop wearing shirts that don't fit. Start looking your best with a custom fitted shirt. Go to propercloth.com/capspace today and enter gift code capspace to save $20 on your first shirt. That's propercloth.com/capspace. Enter code capspace to save $20 on your first shirt and use that capspace code. Let them know that you came from us. Okay, so panic meter for the Lakers, guys.
I'm going to go with a 6, and it might even be a little higher, but for not even knowing what even the expectations are, I just don't see the defense getting fixed. I think a lot of people are relying on this idea that LeBron always goes to the finals, and this ain't the East that LeBron's used to. I don't think that it's just a given that everything goes smoothly in that direction.
5.5. I think the expectations were a little bit high, but I still think they're going to be a capable team, have a good shot at making the playoffs.
Yeah, I would go with the 6 as well. I mean, I think I would reduce my expectations for them to maybe like, you know, a 45 wins overall instead of the 48 that I predicted them for. Okay, so we'll do one more team in full here, and then we'll do like a few Lightning runs because we're a big surprise. Three utterly verbose men were not able to finish this podcast in the allotted amount of time. So Danny, who is it? Who do you want to ask him about?
the Boston Celtics. We haven't talked about the Celtics at all. The two of us, and I do not know what you're thinking about this team.
It's just such a shame that we're not going to get into. We're just going to lightning round the Wizards. Is my first thought.
Yeah,
on that.
But I mean, but they've been talked about too much. Like Lowe wrote a whole article.
Yeah,
about
them. They've been in a simmer of panic for years.
They're so
now.
Boring. Like they're the most boring team in the NBA to me.
Yeah, it's like, what's the reason for panic? You're spending a lot of money on a guy who's probably not nearly as good as people think he is. So the Celtics, yeah, I mean, everybody's identified this with the Tatum shot selection issue, but it seems to be more team-wide when I talk to people who work for them, where there just doesn't seem to be that discipline. But I'm not panicking when it comes to this team, just because I thought there was a big reason for panic at the very beginning when Kyrie Irving comes in looking disheveled, you know, not just a little bit out of shape and a little bit gimpy, but also disheveled. But he's looked really good recently, and that soothes me. Even if they nearly lost to the Suns tonight, Nate and I were checking out at the end of that game.
Oh, what a disaster that was for the Suns! God,
oh God, I felt so bad for Kokoschkov. He just was. He at one point when he was exhorting his team, he kind of went into a crouch that I thought would rip his pants. Or just strain something. I was worried for him, and I felt badly because he just so badly wanted that game with how the Suns have been going. So yeah, that was a complete disaster. I guess it's a little bit surprising their offensive deficiencies, because when you look at the roster, it's a little bit strange that they're so awesome defensively with that roster, and it's a little bit strange that they've been a little mediocre offensively with that roster, I guess are my thoughts. But I'm not worried about them, at least not right now.
Well, so worried about them in the sense of, like, you know, I mean, I think they were the finals favorite for most people. I picked the Raptors, although I said it was extremely close. You know, I probably would favor the Raptors right now, just if only because Kawhi looks so good. I mean, that was part of the variable.
The Raptors have a higher ceiling, yeah, is what I would say. But I think the Kawhi stuff is still a little bit, you know, he looks incredible, but he takes so many games off, and that's probably the right decision. But it just makes me wonder, can you really count on him being there at the end? Which I guess you could say the same thing with Kyrie Irving. Can you count on him being there at the end? But yes, I think Toronto is so far obviously the best team in the East, and maybe, I mean, the Celtics can't control that, right? They can't control how awesome the Raptors look, but that does perhaps perhaps ramp up the panic bit. I don't look at the Celtics right now and go, I'm massively disappointed in what they are. I just, it'd be nice if Tatum improved more. It'd be nice if he was taking smarter and better shots, but progress isn't linear.
The problem is they're not getting any penetration to set up open threes. Like, they're not getting to the rim at all. A couple of notes on here. They are the second highest projected field goal percentage increase behind Houston, 4.1%. I mean, that's huge to shoot 4.1% better from the field. And that's, you know, again, that's not based on the quality of these shooters, but just simply where they are getting their shots from. And also, just they're taking so few shots at the rim that, you know, that's expected to progress towards the mean, but their defense is supposed to decline by 1.7% field goal percentage. You know, teams are supposed to shoot 1.7% better, so that could cancel that out. Although, you know, opponents shooting 29% from three against them, this is the same thing that's been going on for a while here. It's unclear whether, you know, that's something that is just random chance or you know, is a skill that their defense actually has. What are your thoughts, Danny, on the Celtics here?
I'm worried about their offense, but not terrified of it. I think they'll get better at getting to the lane. Hayward, to me, is, you know, improving with time. It depends on the game. Kyrie looks a lot better over the last few games than he did earlier in the year. And the Tatum stuff, I think, could sort itself out. Now, if the playoffs were starting today, I would be massively freaked out. But they're not. They're not starting for another few months. So they have time to figure it out. I'm pretty low on it, and their defense looks good. I do think there's some good fortune in terms of shots that are being missed there. So my panic meter on them is low, but it's another team kind of like where I am with the Pelicans, where where I could see it ramping up and spiking. And then the other reason it would be a little higher for them is that not only are the Raptors better than we expected, but the Bucks are better than we anticipated. So they're going to have another threat
although
to
I
the
do
crown.
Think Boston and, matches up really well with the Bucks.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. They make the Bucks, just like they make the Sixers look bad, I think they make the Bucks look bad, but they have time to develop and improve and all that stuff as well. So
go ahead, sorry.
I don't remember where I was going.
I think I feel less panicked about them. I know we've both mentioned the Kyrie thing, but there was that worry just in the first few games where I thought, oh, something's wrong with him potentially. And if that's the case, then their season's DOA. So I'm coming back from a feeling of their season might be DOA to, they got some stuff to work on. And that's a far better place. I mean, again, expectations define happiness.
Couple of things on that. I agree with you on Kyrie. I feel better now that he actually looks okay. Gordon Hayward, though, is a long way away. He's had a couple of decent games, but, both in the sense that they're, not really featuring him at all, and it's kind of, been an excuse to not feature him, but healthy, he's a way better player than Tatum or Braun. I mean, they've been closing games with, Marcus Smart and Marcus Morris out there. They're just not getting the production from Tatum and Hayward. I mean, if you want to know what this team is, just look at what they were last year when Kyrie was healthy. That's basically what this team is, which is a good team. They win a lot of games down the end. Again, they've been a great clutch team. Who knows whether that's going to continue or not. But they're not a great offense. And Kyrie, for all of his personal brilliance, isn't the guy who, draws so much defensive attention that he's setting up others. He's drawing the gravity of the defense. He's doing stuff with the ball in his hands. He can be efficient on his own, but he's not powering an elite offense by himself. So unless you're basically what you're betting on here, I think the panic meter, they're 27th in offense right now. I mean, my hope were these guys had a chance to be a top five offense and defense. If everybody was, if Tatum and Brown took another step forward and Hayward was back to being who he was, if there wasn't any regression from Al Horford, they had this pretty good bench. Rozier quietly has been awful as well so far. Maybe not awful, but not great so far. So what you're telling me here, Kyrie's back to what he has. Been that'll get the offense kind of maybe into the teens, but if they want to get to where they want to be, this has got to be at least a top 10 offense. So what you're telling me, if you're not going to panic about these guys at all, you're telling me that you believe that Tatum and Hayward and maybe Brown, although he hasn't been as bad I think as those guys, that those guys are going to really really improve the rest of the year, and that they're not only are those guys going to get better, but they're going to find ways to use those guys. So are you making that bet? Do you believe that those guys are going to be better at the end?
I don't know if I necessarily need those guys to massively improve for this particular team and the way they play to grind out three playoff series, which is, I think, what the expectation is or what people are hoping for them. Now, what is concerning is the aforementioned Raptor problem.
Yeah.
I think that's what concerns me. I guess, I think that they could grind their way, absent LeBron, in their way to a finals. But that Raptor situation and what that team looks like gives me concern. So I think there would be almost no panic from me but for the Raptors, and I think that raises my panic level to a 4.5.
I'm a 4 on similar reasons. I think Tatum will figure it out enough. Whether he gets all the way there is, and also I should mention, I think Rozier needs to get better and will get better than what he's been so far as well.
Yeah, and Cleaning the Glass actually has them a little bit better on offense. They're up to 24th, and they have been trending upward with Kerry. I would be at a 6 just because the Bucks and the Raptors are looking so good, and we saw Portland do it last year where they were really bad offensively the first couple of months and then got into being a top 10 unit for the rest of the year, and so that could happen, and they have a lot of talent on this team, but they are struggling to find ways to use it. Their shot mix is just so bad as of now. They never ever get to the foul line. That's a problem. They don't really get any offensive rebounds. That's a problem too. There's a lot of systemic things that are gonna have to get fixed here. Both in terms of just the math of what's going wrong. So I would be higher. I would be at 6.5 just because I'm not sure that the offense would get better. But let's keep in mind here, plus 4.1 net rating. They're 7-4. They're on pace for 52 wins, so that's not that bad. I'd peg them at being, maybe they're going to win 55, 56, which is a little bit below expectations. I think, and they could just, all come together in the playoffs too, and punch above their weight. So, maybe a 6 is too much. I'll downgrade. I'll say a 5. All right, let's do a little lightning round here.
By the way, one, I'm just saying the Wizards is that's not the team that we're depriving people by doing lightning round. I think it's the Sixers. I think that was the one. Sorry,
I mean, there's actually, saying. I mean, a bunch of other ones on here too. I mean, like, so all right.
By the way, I love this topic.
Yeah. All right. So here's how we're gonna do this. Each of us will go. We're going to say panic meter. Well, I guess what we'll do here first, we'll do team's biggest problem. Can it get solved? Panic meter in like a minute each. So let's start with the aforementioned Sixers. Team's biggest problem.
I'm starting. I know people will say the incorporation of Fultz, but I would say it's really Ben Simmons. Maybe not being as good as people think he is, and team scheming for him, and that's just this looming problem in the playoffs. And so I would put the panic meter at a 7.
I was talking to this writer who will remain completely anonymous at Oracle Arena. He writes for The Athletic a couple days ago. Pretty good friends with him.
Is his name
That doesn't narrow it down very much.
Does his name rhyme with Rethan Rouse?
This anonymous gentleman was saying that Ben Simmons might be the most overrated player in the NBA.
That sounds like a hot take. I don't know anybody at The Athletic who would even talk that way.
Maybe if they were on the radio, they would say a take like that. But
okay,
that's a little bit.
Danny, biggest problem for the Sixers, can they fix it? Panic rating.
I'm going to go with a bigger problem, which is I think all three of their highest profile players, meaning Fultz, Simmons, and Embiid, their games are at least somewhat incongruous. I'm a little bit more worried about the Simmons-Embiid point of conflict than Fultz, because all you can do is just not play Fultz at some point. So I'm at a 7 with them. I think that there are ways of fixing, smoothing that over, but it takes the role players doing well. So 7.
Yeah, I mean, they just seem like, even at their best, a team that, can crush 2/3 of the teams in the league just with their defense.
I'm going to, by the way, I'm going to have to bail out of the podcast. My son just woke up, and so this has been fantastic.
Oh, this is great.
I look forward to hearing the remainder of Panic.
All right, well, now at least we have a chance of finishing out at 2 hours. All right, thanks, Ben. Go take care of your son, and I'm sorry if we woke him up.
It's okay. I don't think we did. All right, see you.
Oh, man. Wow, that is deflating, much like one of these teams. So I think their biggest problem that we haven't talked about yet is their lack of depth. And that kind of fits into the whole, how difficult it is to fit around these guys. It's just not a ton of shooting, et cetera. So I would go with a 6 for them, but only because I think I was lower on them to start with than some people were. I definitely don't see them getting to the East Finals. I mean, I think they probably lose in the second round still. I think they match up pretty well against the Pacers, who, they might play in the 4-5. So I still think they'll get to the second round, but I don't expect them to be that competitive there. Where do you want to go next here?
I want to go to another team that I was high on, and maybe unduly so, the Utah Jazz. The Jazz are 5-6 on the season so far. So, in terms of record, and they've underperformed their point differential so far. But this idea, and they've dealt with injuries and all this kind of stuff, but this idea that they're going to be a dominant defense and then a meaningfully above average offense is a little bit under fire right now.
Yeah. The defense actually has been a little bit lucky per Andrew, or maybe not lucky, but expected to regress a little bit, but because they have Rudy Gobert, and they haven't been giving up shots at the rim, I don't expect them, they're always going to not give up shots at the rim because they have Gobert. So I'm not sure that I buy that's going to regress maybe as much as, and Andrew's obviously not providing a subjective calculation there. He's just, these are just what the numbers say with this model. But there's reason to believe maybe that the model doesn't work as well for their defense. And their shots on offense look pretty good. They haven't been hitting the three ball quite as well. They've been a little below average. And they've had some injury concerns with Mitchell out. I mean, they really are going to struggle offensively with that one creator. So I think they're going to be fine. You had them for 55 wins. I thought that was a little optimistic, but I still had them for 52. I think they can get there. They also have a record under Quinn Snyder of playing better as the season goes on. So I'm not that worried about them. I'd put it at like a 4 for them. I think that they, are still another. I mean, I think the race for the number 2 seed in the West, and like who could make it to the West Finals opposite the Warriors, like it's looking like, I kind of hope Houston stays like below expectations, because it could be like any of like 6 teams who get there. It could be really interesting.
That would be exciting, and it could lead to some tactical losing to get on the correct side of the bracket.
Which is
why teams should be able to pick their opponents. I don't need to get into that right now. It's not time. I would go with a 4 for the Jazz as well. I think that a lot of what their flaws have been so far will be corrected. Some of their guys can just play better. Some of those shots will go in a little bit more, but they are going to need to do it at some point. And I mean, the weird thing is just like being flat as many times as they've been so far, like that, the losses to Memphis, and Memphis is a better team than we thought. So maybe those losses.
Memphis is a good matchup for them too.
True. But so yeah, it might look better with time, but yeah. I think a 4 is fine. I'll let you pick the next one since I picked that one.
Okay. The Washington Wizards, their biggest problem is just that they've kind of been what they should be so far. I mean, the offense and the defense in particular. I mean, opponents are shooting 39% from three, but overall, you know, there isn't really a massive decrease that's projected in opponent E field goal percentage when you look at their overall shot profile that they're giving up. They are shooting only 31% from three. They are supposed to get a 3.0% E field goal percentage increase, which is one of the higher ones in the league. But I mean, it really just, I would say their biggest problem is a total lack of team chemistry and lack of communication on defense. And I'm not sure that's going to get fixed. I don't think it is going to be. So I would go with, I mean, I guess the beauty of it is, you know, it's not like the East is any good. But, you know, if you're thinking this team was going to get to the second round, you know, you're at a 10. If you thought they were going to lose in the first round and be like the 7th seed or something, you're probably at like a 6, maybe.
One of the fun things for the Wizards is that over the next week or so, their panic meter is either going to temper a little bit or it's going to skyrocket because they play a lot of bad teams or shaky teams should beat. And so if they start losing these games, then you go, oh crap, like it's a much bigger issue. And yeah, I think communication defensively, they're giving up so many good shots. Like that's something that's hard to quantify sometimes. But when I watch them, when they were getting their butts kicked by Dallas, they were giving up wide open looks. And those are going to go in a higher proportion of the time. Their offensive struggles, I think, will tone down. Yeah. And so they'll become better. They'll become better there. And if you're going to ask me, are they, you know, meaningfully worse than the Pistons and some of those other teams that are kind of the Nets, some of those other teams that are in the mix for the 8 seed and that kind of bottom of the East? No, I think that the Wizards, if they play more to their capability, but I mean, they're 2-9 right now, 2-8, sorry, big, but I don't think they're going to lose their 9th game to Orlando. Hopefully not, because that would be real bad.
Yeah.
But I think that they'll get better enough to be in that mix. So yeah, I'm like a 7 with them, but it will not, I have a hair trigger. I mean, because if this, they have to improve really, really quickly, because I don't think their offense is good enough anymore for them to go on those tears like they did, what I think was last year when they just won a bunch of games after a slow start. Was it 2 years? That was.
Yeah, 2 years ago, they started 2-8 and finished with 49 wins. Yeah, I mean, if they lose, you know, like 4 out of their next 6 or something to these bad teams, you know, then they're done. You know, I mean, if they get to 10 games under 500, you know, you can probably, even with the rest of the East not exactly running away and hiding.
Well, and the other part of that is the way that their players have reacted to what's happened so far is even more concerning, because they're losing it a little bit. And I mean, as much as we like to focus on what's on the court, I mean, all of that matters.
I can't believe the departure of Marcin Gortat wasn't a panacea for the locker room. All right, last one here. Minnesota Timberwolves, what is their biggest problem?
I think their biggest problem is that and they haven't had a great opportunity for this, I'm not sure if their best is as good as I thought it was going to be. And we haven't got, you know, Jeff Teague's missed time, the whole Jimmy Butler saga and all that kind of stuff. But I thought their fastball was going to be, you know, we talked about this idea of like, oh, they could be like a 49-win team and this is going to move them down. And we each took their under at like 41 or whatever it was. And that was assuming Jimmy Butler was going to get traded pretty sooner than probably this. And I don't, you know, when I watch them, I don't trust their defense. I still don't. And then offensively, you know, they have those moments, but, and Derrick Rose has been better than I expected him to be. At least he's making more shots than I expected. But overall, I just don't think they're as good a team as I thought they would be.
So I think the inconsistency obviously is a huge one. I think just an overall lack of effort. I mean, this team with Karl Anthony Towns on the floor, they get 65% of available defensive rebounds. When Andrew Wiggins is on the floor, they get 64% of available defensive rebounds. Like, they can't get a rebound. Like, Karl Anthony Towns has become a terrible defensive rebounder. The only player with a positive net rating on this team is Derrick Rose with a positive 2.1. Who would have thought that Derrick Rose would be like the one guy this team is really playing well? And, you know, Butler, General Soreness has played 9 games. You know, usually they were great with him on the floor last year, you know, +8 with him on the floor. Now they're -8 with him on the floor. They're 4-8. You know, they've had a rough road trip here. They lost all the games. And, you know, this is a team that with Jimmy Butler, in theory, is supposed to be playing at a high 40 win level. They're nowhere close to that. Butler at some point is going to get traded. Also, I mean, presumably if they get to the point where it's clear that they're not competing this year, you know, if they get to 10 games under 500, then maybe they start to think, okay, we will trade Butler for future assets. And then they're going to get a lot worse, I think, at that point too. Although, you know, I'm not sure that Butler is even helping them that much anymore. Karl Towns has been awful. I mean, I think he will play better, but maybe not until Butler gets traded. You know, it seems to be like in his head at this point. So it's really, there's just no bright spot for them. I mean, the one thing that you can look at is that they haven't shot it that well, in particular on two-pointers. They're expected to shoot 3.1% better than they have. But the D, which has been their biggest problem, is like kind of right where it should be in theory. And where it is right now is like a 115 defensive rating. So, yeah, I mean, my panic meter for these guys is at a 10. I mean, like if you're thinking of them as a playoff team, and there's just no indication right now that they're anywhere close to that. And I mean, it's not, we've seen Tom Thibodeau teams every once in a while turn it around, but this is not the same group of like gritty try hard dudes that he had in Chicago.
Well, actually it partially is the same group. It's just that they're not 22 anymore.
Oh man. Yeah. So what is your panic meter for them?
It's an 8. And
why wouldn't it be a 10?
Because I think they have more talent. So like, I mean, Karl Anthony Towns has to play better. Like, I mean, that sort of, that can smooth over some of it. I feel like he does. I'm still a believer in him.
I am too, but I mean, and like the fact that he's been so bad to me is almost an indication that like, it's not going to get, but like if he had just been like, okay,
well,
can we
add to their panic meter because Josh Richardson is playing so well that Miami probably doesn't want to trade him for Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, no, that's not good either. I mean,
yeah, maybe that pushes me to an 8.5.
Yeah. Certainly if you're the Rockets, you're relishing every Minnesota loss at this point, hoping that they get into more of a future mode in terms of trading.
Yeah, I was about to go through their upcoming schedule, but I feel like we can save that for the not imminent, but soon coming 15 and 60.
Yeah, I mean, and probably next week we'll do the like, are they for real podcast, which is kind of a similar analysis for some of the surprise teams. So there haven't been that many surprise teams. I guess the Bucks obviously are going to be on there. Portland, those are probably the two that really stand out. All right, anything else we got to talk about before we wrap up?
I have a Real GM Radio podcast coming out with Tom Haberstroh about the offensive explosion, his Steph Curry piece, and a couple other things. And then I'm probably going to have a piece for The Athletic, which is now less timely with Steph Curry's injury, about the concept of a Curry-Durant stagger. I kind of went through it from a different perspective, and that will be out for The Athletic. And then if you haven't read the Oladipo piece, that's still up there too.
All right. We'll talk to you all on Sunday. Till then.
You must love hoops if you're enjoying another great episode of Dunked On. The Locked On Podcast Network has more hoops for you. Locked On has a podcast on every NBA team. If you're a Lakers fan, a Bucks fan, a Celtics fan, or a Mavericks fan, the Locked On Podcast Network has a daily podcast on your favorite team. All 30 NBA teams have a daily podcast at Locked On. Search on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.